We had been driving for over 2 hours when the nightmare began. The anomalous behavior that would affect the area started as abruptly as a lightning strike. I felt strange and disassociated. Goosebumps rose all over my arms as a smell like ozone filled the air, filtering through the air vents in thick, invisible clouds. I am so excited to see this, my girlfriend Alice cried happily in the passenger seat. Do you know I've never seen a full solar eclipse before? I glanced over, feeling nervous. Yet Alice didn't seem affected in the slightest. I wiped my forehead, clearing the trickles of sweat that had begun forming there. Do you smell that? I asked, changing the mood abruptly. Alice glanced over at me, the smile falling off her face in a space of a moment. She shook her head. No, smell what? She said. I gave her a look of disbelief. The smell of ozone was so thick that I could almost taste it at the back of my throat. I repressed an urge to gag. I rolled down the windows. The breeze cleared out some of the smell, but I still caught hints of it even in the fresh currents of air that streamed through the car. All around us, the slit rifts of the sky shone a cyanotic blue, covering the earth like a suffocating blanket. Mountain ranges loomed overhead, their sharp peaks hidden under fresh virgin snow. We planned the hike to the top of the highest peak before the solar eclipse began. This whole place is so empty, Alice said, brushing a lock of blonde hair the color of platinum over her ear. I can't remember the last time I saw a house. She took out her phone. She flicked on the screen before heaving a deep sigh. And we get absolutely no service all the way out here. You better not get injured. We won't be able to call for help. I laughed nervously, wondering if she had just jinxed us. You're the one who's accident prone, I said, starting to relax slightly. The last trace of the foul ozone smell had dissipated by now. The clean mountain air and majestic landscapes rising all around us made the place seem like some kind of wonderland, far removed from the small sufferings and agonies of daily life. After another 20 minutes of driving, surrounded on all sides by dark forests filled with evergreens and shadows, we saw a faded brown sign reading, "To Mount Bloodstone, 5 miles. Finally, Alice cried triumphantly, her whole expression changing into one of excitement. I've never been here before, but Caitlin told me this place has the best view in the county. As the mountain loomed in front of us like a crouching giant, I could see why. It towered over all the surrounding mountains, its sharp white peak stabbing upwards into the sky like a spear. Steep cliffs of light brown stones surrounded it on all sides. Untouched forests of maple, oak, and pine grew thick and vibrant on Mount Bloodstone's rocky soil. We still have 4 hours until the eclipse starts, Alice said, looking down at her cell phone. The pavement suddenly ended, and the road turned into a snaking path of tread marks and loose stones. My SUV handled it easily, but it was slow going. A few minutes later, we broke out through the forests and thick brush that carpeted the land. On the driver's side stood a cliff of jutting rectangular stones, and a drop of hundreds of feet to a field of massive stones far below us if I accidentally veered off the narrow road. On the passenger side, there was just smooth vertical walls of hard granite. The parking area is supposed to be up ahead just a few miles, Alice said excitedly. I felt sickening waves of dread passing through my stomach as I glanced out the window at the steep drop waiting only inches away on my side of the car. I wasn't exactly terrified of heights, and I had no problem going on planes or roller coasters. But situations like this always sent butterflies fluttering throughout my chest and caused my feet to tingle with anxiety. It was the idea of unsecured heights, the realization that an accidental jerk of the wheel or a tire blowing out at the exact wrong moment could send us careening over the edge. "You're not nervous right now," I asked. Alice only laughed. "Nope, I trust you, Brian," she said, putting a warm hand on my shoulder. Her soft skin reminded me of suede, unmarked and unlined. I still couldn't believe that such a beautiful girl wanted to be with me. We had been together for 3 months, and it had been one of the happiest periods I could remember. I looked over at her with love, taking my eyes off the road for a moment. Suddenly, it felt like all the tires exploded at once, and the car began swerving wildly out of control, the steering wheel spinning wildly in my hands with a pull like a falling stone. "Fudge!" I cried. Alice screamed next to me, her voice filled with mortal terror. The SUV nearly swerved off the edge of the cliff when the metal rims caught on something and veered hard to the opposite direction. The vehicle swung hard into the rock wall on Alice's side. There was the tortured shredding of metal, the explosion of glass. Screams filled the car, but I didn't realize until later that they had came from my own mouth. My head flew forward, smashing hard into the steering wheel. I immediately tasted salty blood as I bit my tongue hard. My vision went white and pain like lightning ripped its way through my forehead. Time seemed to spiral away into something strange and alien. Stunned, I sat there, not knowing what had happened. "Brian," Alice's voice rang out from next to me, sounding muted and far away. I felt someone shaking my arm gently. "Brian, can you hear me?" I blinked fast, my vision starting to return to normal. My head felt like it was being pressed in a vise. A splitting migraine ripped its way through my skull. I groaned, raising my hands to my forehead. I tried pushing on the sides of my head, as if I could keep it from splitting apart from simple willpower alone. After a few moments, the pain subsided slightly. I inhaled deeply and spit blood on the floor. Yeah, I'm okay," I said, though I wasn't sure how true that was. I pulled my fingers away from my forehead, seeing they were slick with blood. I glanced over at Alice, but other than a small cut across her cheek, she seemed totally unhurt. "What the hell just happened?" She shook her head, uncertainty crossing her eyes. "We had an accident," she said, glancing down at her cell phone. She tried calling 911, putting it up to her ear. She gave me a grim look and shook her head. "There's no cell phone towers anywhere around here. We're going to have to walk to find help, or at least until we could find somewhere with cell phone reception." "An accident? With what? The damn air?" A rush of adrenaline pushed the pain away temporarily. I flung the door open, stumbling out of the SUV. I looked back on the dirt road that spiraled around its way around the mountain and out of view, seeing the glint of steel. Confused, I started over in that direction.
"Wait!"
Alice yelled, quickly jumping out of the vehicle and sprinting to catch up with me.
"You don't look very steady on your feet yet. Maybe you should just sit down."
"Look at this frickin' crap," I cried,
pointing to what lay stretched across the road, dug slightly into the dirt. Alice's eyes widened in understanding as she saw it too. Someone had set up a spike strip. The gleaming spikes of metal reaching up like claws still had pieces of my shredded tires caught on their sharp points. "Someone's out to get us," I whispered nervously, glancing both ways down the dirt road. I had no idea what to do now. We were out in the absolute middle of nowhere. I didn't even know which direction to go, unless I wanted to go hiking back dozens of miles to the last gas station we had seen. The SUV was blocking the narrow road. Further down, I saw a small dirt turnaround jutting off to the side. I drove the vehicle on its rims and pulled over, locking the doors. I grabbed my backpack and filled it with my water bottle, buck knife, and a small amount of food we had in the car, mostly trail mix and candy. It wouldn't last long, I knew, and the water would run out even sooner if we didn't find a river or stream. I grabbed my Swiss Army knife and lighter and put them in my pocket, just in case for emergencies.
"Which way?" Alice asked.
It was a good question. This road didn't lead to the trail that wound its way to the top of Mount Bloodstone, after all, but also continued down the other side and potentially to civilization. I had no map, so I just shrugged and motioned forward. "I think we should keep moving in the same direction," I said. The last gas station was at least 20 miles back that way. For all we knew, there could be a house or another gas station much closer if we just kept going straight. It was weak logic, and I knew I was grasping at straws, but at that moment, straws were all we had. Alice grabbed her backpack and, side by side, we started hiking up the winding road that ascended the steep slopes of Mount Bloodstone. We had been walking for nearly an hour when I noticed a strange smell wafting on the breeze. It was an overwhelming smell of ozone, thick and cloying, just like I had noticed earlier. I nearly gagged, bending over. "Oh God, what is that?" I asked. "It's like a chemical factory is nearby or something." Alice just shook her head. From the nearby forest, a cacophony of branches snapping and trees falling started reverberating all around us. When I first heard it, it sounded distant. I looked at Alice at first, wondering if it was some sort of avalanche or earthquake on another nearby mountain. "Is that an avalanche?" I yelled as the sound rapidly increased into deafening echoes of smashing and breaking, heading in our direction. A predatory cry rang through the mountains, full of power and energy, reminded me of the roaring of some ancient Tyrannosaurus Rex. It shook the ground and mixed with the noise of destruction that came at us like a tidal wave. Alice and I started sprinting blindly up the road. She tried to say something, but I couldn't hear her over the ringing in my ears. Whatever was causing the racket veered away from us and deeper into the woods, angling itself straight up the side of the mountain. I glanced back, seeing trees fall and branches crash. In the middle of this path of destruction, I caught a glimpse of something massive and alien. It slithered forward like a snake, hundreds of feet long. Its body was covered in soft layers of blood-red feathers that rippled gently in the breeze. A deep turquoise line of feathers ran straight down the center of its spine. From the top of its body, two enormous wings jutted out like the wings of some enormous dragon. They had soft, pink blood vessels spiderwebbing throughout the pale gray flesh. The wings beat at the air, and the enormous feathered snake slowly flew up, its sharp, spiked tail ripping more trees out of the ground as it slammed from side to side. Within a few seconds, it gained speed, flying up and over an enormous stone cliff and out of view. The world seemed to go silent as the beast disappeared, the echoes of its destruction rapidly fading off into the valleys below. Alice had gotten far ahead of me. I sprinted up to her. She turned to me, covered in sweat. Her skin looked chalk white from terror. "Did you see it?" I asked breathlessly. She gave me a strange look.
"See what?"
she said. "When the avalanche started, I ran. I didn't see anything." I stared at her, mouth agape. "You didn't look back a minute ago? There was some massive animal causing all those trees to fall." "That wasn't an avalanche," I said. "It sounds absolutely bat-crap insane, but it looked like an enormous feathered serpent." "That's ridiculous, Brian," she said condescendingly. "Are you sure you're not still suffering from hitting your head during the accident? Sometimes that kind of stuff can cause weird side effects." "What, are you saying I'm tripping out?" "I'm telling you, I saw it as certainly as I see you right in front of me right now. It was moving away from us, and I didn't see its face, but I saw its body. It must have been 200 or 300 feet long," I said grimly, trying to convince her. Alice only sighed and glanced forward.
"We should keep going," she said.
"We're going to want to get out of here before nightfall. It gets cold up here in the mountains in April." "I've got my lighter," I said. "I'll start a fire if we need to. I'm not worried about that. I am worried about who the hell spiked my tires. And why there's a giant snake slithering around the mountains, though." But deep down, I knew Alice was right. Regardless of whatever weird crap was going on around us, we needed to keep moving. I didn't want to be here after dusk either, but not because I was worried about the cold or about running out of food and water. "The solar eclipse is only a couple hours away," Alice said, glancing down at her phone. "I really don't care," I said glumly. I took my water from my pack and took a long swallow. I held it up to the sun and realized with growing anxiety that my water was already mostly gone. "Why do you think someone would put spike strips on this road?" I asked. The thought had been bouncing around my head, growing louder and more insistent. I kept coming back to the same answer: to ambush, kidnap, or possibly murder them. The dark woods began to feel more sinister, the shadows deeper and darker. I kept my head on a swivel, looking constantly for any signs that we were being followed. "It's probably just kids or teenagers screwing around," Alice said, raising a perfectly plucked eyebrow. "I mean, who else would do something so dangerous and stupid? Someone who wants to rob or kidnap someone? Or maybe a serial killer looking for victims?" I responded, feeling sick. I had taken my buck knife out of my backpack and now held it tightly in my hand, my knuckles white. I felt better just holding it, even though I knew it would likely do no good against someone with a gun, in that it would do absolutely nothing against that enormous snake if it came back. I looked into the woods stretching up the side of the mountain. Behind a nearby cluster of bushes, a pale face peeked out, something that looked mostly but not entirely human. It had bone-white skin and slitted pupils in its glowing yellow eyes. Its hairless face split into a grin. Two obsidian fangs swiveled out like the teeth of a rattlesnake. I stopped in my tracks, stuttering and pointing. Alice glanced over at me. She followed my finger and froze like a deer in the headlights. The creature hissed as it crashed through the bushes, its jaw unhinging and jutting forward like a snake's. Its black fangs looked as sharp as needles. Its hiss grew into a gurgle. In the trees behind it,
I saw more movement, more pale faces rising up, their slitted pupils radiating hunger and bloodlust. "Run!" I screamed, tearing off up the road without looking back to see if Alice would follow. On my left stood a drop-off that must have been 1,000 feet down to a babbling river far below. The only possible escape was forward. I was already exhausted from the long hike, but I pushed myself forward with every ounce of will until my head pounded and my vision turned white. I felt ready to collapse. I heard rustling from a thick cluster of brush up ahead. I tried moving past it as fast as I could. I saw a pointed reptilian head emerge from the leaves, the bone-white skin cracking as its lipless mouth split into a wide grin. Its fangs swiveled out, surrounded by dozens of smaller black teeth shaped like needles. It leapt at me, its scaled white body soaring through the air. I felt its sharp talons of fingers rip into my chest as it knocked me down to the ground. Kicking and swearing, I tried to bring the buck knife up into the thing's chest, but it grabbed my head and slammed it hard into the dirt road. My temple smashed into a rock with a cracking of bone. My ears rang as the world exploded into blackness. Everything spun around me, and then I was falling into eternal nothingness. I woke up suddenly, the migraine in my head now so bad that it felt like torrents of lava were burning their way through my skull. I groaned, blinking quickly. The sunlight streamed down from the sky made me feel weak and nauseous. I turned, retching, but my stomach had nothing but water in it. I ended up vomiting up water with pink streaks of what looked like blood in it. I raised my head, looking around. "Welcome to hell, buddy," a middle-aged man with a face like a bulldog said from a few feet to my right. I glanced over at him, seeing he was tied down with coils of rope to a wooden bench. I realized I was situated the same way. My hands and feet were tightly tied together. I tried wiggling them free with no success. Dozens more people were situated in a line stretching off into the distance, each of them tied down to their own primitive table of rough planks. I looked to my left, expecting to see Alice, but she wasn't there. It was an elderly woman with an enormous purple bruise over her left temple. Her dark eyes fluttered as she stared at me with horror. More people were tied down on that side too, all of them moving their heads and looking around with dead eyes and expressions of horror. "They got you too, huh?" the old woman asked in a weak, strained voice. Her eyes looked far away, as if she was already on the other side of the veil and no longer existed in her physical body. "Where are we?" I asked. "What's going on?" "You're in the town of Nocturne," the man on my right said, his fat face quivering with fear. "From what I've gathered while I've been held prisoner here, those creatures worship the snake god, who only comes out during the solar eclipse. Apparently they feed him, and in exchange, he lets them drink its blood, which makes them immortal."
"They're not creatures," the old woman said. "Those are people."
I looked at her askance. If the situation weren't so grave, I may have even laughed.
"Those are people?"
I said sarcastically. "With the slitted eyes and the forked tongues and the fangs that come out like rattlesnakes? I'm not sure if our definition of people is the same." The woman just shook her head.
"You don't understand," she said. "When they drink the blood of the serpent, they change. They start just like you and me. They're cultists."
I raised my head and looked around,
realizing that we were situated in what looked to be an abandoned town cut in the forest near the peak of Mount Bloodstone. In the center, there was a church whose walls had so many holes that they reminded me of Swiss cheese. The exterior may have been white once, but it had turned to gray with age. Vines and patches of dark mold grew over its wooden walls. Houses 2 or 3 stories tall were scattered randomly around us. Trees were growing through the walls of many, their branches and roots intertwining with the collapsing structures. All the glass of the windows had long been smashed out and turned to dust. Many of the roofs had collapsed inwards. Birds' nests and streaks of dirt covered the outside. Next to the dilapidated structures sat what looked like hundreds of cars. Some were apparently brand new, and others were so rusted and ancient that I couldn't even tell what make or model they were. They all had ripped open tires. "Nocturne, huh?" I said. "Do these people actually live here? It looks like the entire town is about to fall into the earth." I tried to think, to formulate some sort of plan. I had no idea how could I possibly escape this apparently hopeless situation. Then I felt a lump in my pocket, suddenly remembering the Swiss Army knife I had put in there. I struggled with the rope, moving my hands as close as I could. After a lot of effort, I managed to pull the Swiss Army knife free. The sky had begun to go dark. With horror, I looked up, realizing the solar eclipse had begun. The moon slowly ate the sun, and the feathered serpent would soon be here to drink our blood in celebration. Dozens of the transformed snake people filtered out of the collapsing houses, the church, and the surrounding forest as the eclipse rapidly progressed. They moved towards us in a circle. Among the crowd of monsters, I saw a few regular people with glassy eyes and the blank expressions of true believers. One of them was Alice. She held the hand of one of the abominations, its sharp talons wrapped in her soft fingers. When she saw me looking in her direction, she grinned. The superficial charm and charisma was gone now, revealing the cold, psychopathic determination underneath. "My father," she said by the way of explanation, looking at the abomination with clear love and adoration. "He always said I would join the Holy Ones, that I would be able to drink the blood of Kokoken. I only needed to bring my own sacrifice for the god. So, thank you, Brian. Your death will allow me to rise into immortality, into eternity, into endless precision of eclipses and feedings that will follow." I was too stunned to speak. My teeth chattered in terror, but I didn't get to think about it long, for at that moment, the trees in the nearby forest started falling with a crash. An overwhelming smell of ozone filled the air, marking the coming of the strange beast. I heard an ancient predatory roar that ripped its way through the mountains like thunder, and then the feathered serpent's body appeared through a patch of trees. Its blood-red feathers shimmered in the mountain breeze as its wings beat the air. I quickly ran my small Swiss Army knife over the rope, trying to cut my hands free, but the rope was thick and the knife dull. It was slow going, and under the stress of the moment and the wailing of Kukulkan, it became hard to think. As the eclipse neared its climax, the transformed snake creatures raised their heads to the sky. Their hissing grew louder as many voices mixed together, until it rose into a wailing scream. As if called by the keening of his many followers, Kokoken broke through the edge of the forest. He had eyes like pools of liquid flame in his enormous, monstrous face. 2 nose holes like those of a snake were situated in the center of his face.
his jaw unhinged, showing of hundreds of razor-sharp teeth that glittered like opal. Inside that gaping mouth, in the place of a tongue, I saw a hairless, screaming human face with black sockets for eyes. The visage, hidden inside the mouth of Kokoken, radiated pure insanity and agony, and I wondered if this was the true face of the Serpent God, the face that had lived through countless eons and seen millions of eclipses. The feathered serpent lunged at the nearest of the more than 40 bound people tied to wooden planks in the shape of crude sacrificial tables. He gnashed his shimmering fangs together with a crack like a gunshot. Then he carefully closed his enormous mouth over the first of the sacrifices, a young woman who screamed in terror as the teeth closed in around her like a bear trap. The blood exploded from her body, covering the hairless, pale face inside the serpent's mouth with splotches of blood. The face twisted into a silent scream, reminded me of some sort of monstrous, eyeless infant. Its toothless mouth opened, hungry and waiting. Kukulkan drank with a disgusting, sucking sound. As his teeth pierced her vital organs, he let the warm, crimson fluid stream into his hungry mouth. I'd nearly gotten my hands free by this point. Panicked, I cut as fast as I could, accidentally slicing a deep gash into my right hand, but my adrenaline was so high I barely felt it. Finally, with a surge of hope so powerful it felt like my heart might explode, I felt the rope give way. I sat up and began cutting the rope tying my legs down as Kokoken moved closer, feasting on the next set of victims. The snake abominations had slowly gathered around the long body of the serpent god. As their fangs protruded like switchblades, I saw them biting deeply into the god's flesh and drinking the black ichor that leaked out from the many wounds. The sun flickered overhead like a dying comet as the eclipse neared its peak. The rope holding my legs gave way and I jumped up. An animal panic ripped its way through my chest as I looked back, wondering if Kokoken would see one of his tributes escaping and giving chase. But the snake god was distracted by his feast of fresh blood. The eclipse had reached its zenith by this point, and the world had gone dark. The stars came out, twinkling like chips of white ice in the endless void. The wailing of the dying and the soon-to-die rang out like the cries of the damned from hell. I sprinted towards the forest. I was almost there when Alice stepped out from behind a tree, holding a large folding knife in her hand. Her eyes seemed as cold as empty space, as dark and lifeless as a black hole. "You're not going anywhere," she hissed through gritted teeth. "The god must have his fill." She ran at me with the knife raised high. Instinctively, I jammed the Swiss Army knife out in front of me, stabbing her directly in the neck. She gave a cry like a strangled rabbit. With the last of her strength, she swung the wicked blade at my arm. With a burning agony, I felt it slice deeply through the skin and muscle. Warm rivers of blood flowed down my arm, leaving ruby-red drops behind me on the ground of the dark forest. Alice collapsed to the ground, kicking and seizing. She grabbed at her throat, her eyes accusing and filled with a cold, furious hatred. I sprinted past her dying body. She choked on her own blood as it frothed and bubbled through the gaping hole in her throat. The cries of the dying and the predatory screaming of the serpent god followed me down the side of Mount Bloodstone as I ran in a panic, still shell-shocked and disassociated, my head still screaming with a burning migraine from the many injuries I had suffered this day. I ended up finding the dirt road and following it back the way I came. I hiked as far as I could that day until night fell. I wanted to put as much distance between myself and Mount Bloodstone as possible.
I had a fire in the forest that night, and I kept a constant watch. I thought I caught glimpses of pale faces with slitted pupils peeking around bushes, but whenever I looked, I saw nothing. Perhaps it was just my sleep-deprived, exhausted mind suffering from too much stress and trauma. Perhaps. I ended up reaching a gas station the next day. I felt like a man dying of thirst in the desert reaching an oasis. With thanks, I looked up to the sun and the sky, glad to see its light burning. At that moment, I hoped I would never see another solar eclipse again.